Well, good morning. This is Christina Malisoff with another edition of Tell It Like It Is. And we will be joined this morning with Rana Morris from the Occupy Albany movement. And after that, at the bottom of the half hour at 10:30, we'll be listening to a pre-recorded interview with woofers. And if you don't know what a woofer is, it's not the dog that's sitting in my lap right now. We'll find out. So stay tuned for Tell It Like It Is. All right, so we got to listen to that whole bit of music this morning, and hopefully we have Rana on the phone with us. Let me just see.
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Hey, good morning, Rana. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on WGXE Community Radio.
No problem. I'm also joined by Daniel here.
Okay, fantastic. And Rana, briefly, can you tell folks exactly what your role is in the Occupy Albany movement?
I don't have like an official role. I am part of the direct action working group, and I'm just somebody who comes down to the occupation a lot. I don't sleep there very often because I have a 3-year-old at home who I need to be with, but I try to help out where I can, and that's kind of what a lot of us are doing, just sort of working on it however we can. But though there are a lot of people who sleep out very often or all the time.
Well, Rana, this Direct Action Committee, is this part of how the General Assemblies or the new kind of democracy with a small d is being put into effect in the Occupy movement?
The committee itself doesn't, so there are always different committees, and anybody can join them. They're open. There are things like direct action. There is a facilitation team who figures out the best ways to run the meetings. There is, you know, the food group, the sanitation group, and they're all open. Anybody can come. We try to make our meeting times public.
And is this a way that are you experimenting in a way with how you see the new kind of democracy that we're all asking for, a real representation, not by politicians, but with people actually thinking and making those decisions about how we want our world and our economy to run? Do you see this as being like the beginnings of that, how that's set up?
Well, I think a lot of groups have run this way for a long time, but now I just feel like it's getting much more widespread. Like, groups are making consensus-based decisions with hundreds and sometimes even, you know, 1,000 people coming to group decisions. And it's, I think it's really good to help everybody get their voices heard. And anybody can show up at the General Assemblies that we have and, you know, make proposals or announcements and discuss other people's proposals and announcements and help the group make a decision.
Have you been supporting other issues in Albany, such as a lot of the Occupy movements have gone out and on marches to support, like in New York City, to support other issues of like police brutality targeted police racial profiling. Are you guys also going out and supporting specific issues in the community?
Yes, we definitely have. We're and so when we're going on these actions, these marches and things, they're not always specific. We're not always saying, you know, every single person in the Occupy movement must support this thing.
Right.
And a lot of times we as a working group are able to plan these actions without the consent of everybody, but we try to do the things that we think most people are supportive of, and anybody, of course, is free to speak up with any issues about any of these things. But yesterday we had a march in solidarity with Oakland's general strike,
mm-hmm.
and with Scott Olson, who was the Iraq War veteran who was injured by the tear gas canister that was shot at his head by the police as they tried to evict the Occupy Oakland encampment.
Right.
And so we marched to the federal building here in Albany yesterday and had speakers about the war budget. We had a veteran talking about the VA and about how veterans are treated when they're done with their service in this country, and we had local labor leaders
mm-hmm.
lending their support to the movement also.
Which labor leaders? Because we last week did a show where we had Steve Early on, who is a labor activist and journalist, and he was the president of the Communication Workers of America for 27 years, and we were discussing the importance of having labor on board and to have this kind of coalitions, which you see actually more in Europe. Do you feel, can you describe who is actually at the Occupy movements and what coalitions are starting to form there? I mean, specific to Albany.
Let's see. As regards of just to labor?
Oh, labor and other organizations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Another very supportive one has been the New York Civil Liberties Union
mm-hmm.
that has helped. We have legal observers there pretty, I think, 24 hours a day, right, Daniel? And then they also accompany us on all of our actions and marches and help deal with the police and everything. So that's been a huge help. And I think through this occupation, because there are also other groups coming together, I feel like other groups that maybe could use the Civil Liberties Union will now be able to meet the members and
mm-hmm.
you know, bring. I think it's really a good sort of networking tool that a lot of us who are very active, you know, like Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace
right.
and the Troy Area Labor Council
mm-hmm.
and a lot of different people, the Social Justice Center, we're all sort of meeting each other and getting together. And I'm sure that we'll continue to work on things after this.
Yeah, no, that's an amazing thing.
If it ever is over.
Right. No, I think that's amazing, and I think that's one of the most important parts of this occupation is two things. One is to empower people to know how much power they actually have. And also to connect them to other organizations so that they don't feel so isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And which labor, which unions have come out in support of you folks in Albany? Do you know, or has any of the...
We've had a lot of support from CSEA and
right.
SEIU.
So that's a Civil Service Employees Union International, and CSEA is the...
That's Civil Service Employees, and SEIU is the State Employees, State Employees Union, and mm. so both of those have a lot of members in the Capital District here.
Great, great. And so on a day-to-day level, what does it seem like in the camps? I know you said that you're not overnight there because of having a child, but how does, for people down in Columbia and Greene counties, how does it look there? How many people are there? How is it operating? And
Well, here's Daniel, and he is there a lot of the time, so
okay.
I think he'd be a great person to answer that question.
All right, Daniel, welcome to Tell It Like It Is.
Thank you so much. So it's extremely variable from night to night and day to day, depending on if we have a march or if we have a specific issue being discussed at the General Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
But on a typical night, there will be about 50 people staying at the occupation. We have somewhere from 60 to 70 tents set up right now. A lot of them are gathered into small little tent villages to you know, foster a little bit more warmth and between those tents. And it is it's a vibrant community mm-hmm. already, even though it's just a couple weeks in. And we've got an amazing amount of support from the community, and we have received so many donations that, you know, sometimes we don't even know what to do with them all, but a lot of volunteers have stepped up and taken on organization tasks so that we can really make sure that we dole out all of these donations fairly. And it has been an amazing project just to, like Rana said, meet everybody, but also just to learn skills and to learn how to work together in an intentional way. And so it's an amazing experience, and I suggest that anyone in the Hudson Valley come up and check it out, maybe this weekend or, mm-hmm. or any time during the week.
Are you getting a real cross-section? I also asked this of Rana, but are you getting a real cross-section of Albany folks, or is it just, I mean, I don't want to put it in a disparaging way, but is it the same groups that come out and meet each other, which is great, like Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace and others, but are you seeing also a good cross-section of just, you know, everyday people who may not have been politically aligned before? Do they seem to be attracted to coming and finding out more from you folks?
Yeah, definitely. There's been a great showing of people who have never been politically active mm-hmm. before, and they're just getting to know what the term activist means. And it's really heartening to educate in a very open sense and just talk about the way we feel about things and educate people through our experiences. And the state and city workers especially, they come and they join us for lunch because we have a food group who provides lunch every day mm-hmm. and we're right there next to the Capitol and City Hall. So we're in a prime location for the state and city workers to just join us during their lunch break, which has been a real joy.
Yeah, I bet. And there's something really wonderful about free food. Just the idea of it, I think, is almost anti-capitalistic.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Are you connected? I'm curious if you know about other Occupy movements. Are Occupy movements talking to each other, and how does that work?
We communicate a lot through all of our various Facebook pages mm-hmm. a lot, and sometimes we'll have announcements of what is going on at different occupations. And twice we've had people who come into our camp who have been kind of going traveling on sort of these tours of occupation. Mm-hmm. And there was one person who came last week, and he said, I've been to, you know, like 6 or 8 of the different occupations, and so he came to share with us sort of what is working for some groups, what's not working. Sometimes, because, you know, if you get a huge group of people camped together, you have certain issues, certain problems, and certain ways that you can do things to make it run smoothly. So he would be able to say, here's a problem that came up in another group, maybe you could figure it out before it becomes a problem here, and things like sanitation and security and safety and things like that.
And also just following from that, there's a national call between the occupations that's run by OccupyTogether.org. Every week, a representative from a PR working group at each respective occupation is empowered to go on and talk about their occupation's successes and challenges, and just to discuss and build solidarity in the movement.
I wanted to also ask what the response, especially for folks who haven't heard, it's pretty amazing. If you could go through the response of since you've been out there, which has been approximately how long?
14 days.
14 days, 2 weeks. Okay.
Tomorrow.
Great, wonderful guys, and I just want to say for the listening audience, I really admire you because I am such I really detest cold weather, and I have a hard time dealing with it. So anyone who can stay out in the cold really has to be dedicated, I think. But I wanted to know the response from government, Albany government, from Mario Cuomo to Mayor Jennings, and also David Soares, the district attorney. If you can just briefly tell us what the story is with those guys and their response to your action.
Well, the first day we went and set up on Friday the 21st, we really didn't know what the response was going to be. We knew that we were going into a park that had an 11 p.m. curfew, and we were prepared to, you know, test that and set up and try to spend the night anyway. And how it kind of came out was we got immediate pressure from the state police saying you absolutely can't be here past 11 p.m. And the park where we're located is right in downtown Albany, and half of the park is owned by the city and the other half is owned by the state. So that first night, we were kind of spread over both sides of it, and the state trooper said, we definitely will be enforcing that curfew. We'll, you know, arrest everyone if we need to. And we didn't really get any communication from the city police that first night at all. They didn't even show up, really.
Maybe one mounted unit. They had two mounted cops there on horses.
Okay, right. But we didn't really get any communication from them, so we put all of our tents and everything on the city half of the park, and 11 o'clock came and went, and we were still there. The next day, we heard news that the governor had asked the mayor, and that he was asking the mayor again that night to evict us. Enforce the curfew, but he didn't. And we also got direct communication from David Soares that he would not, even if we did get arrested, he wouldn't be prosecuting anybody. That's the district attorney.
That's wonderful.
So that was a little, that, you know, made us pretty confident about being able to stay. And so since then, we haven't had any indication from the city that they want to kick us out. The general response has been that our First Amendment rights are more important than an 11 p.m. curfew.
Right, and just excuse us for a minute, but our studios here in Hudson are right next to a train station. So if we just hang in there, I just want to tell the listening folks, if they have any questions, they can, for Rana and Daniel, that they can call the station at 518-828-0290, and we will take your question, or you could call 697-7400. We'll take your question, and we'll put it to the Albany occupation folks. I've got a question about public spaces. We only have a couple more minutes, but my concern is about also with the Occupy movement, or what I find fascinating is that we're taking back our public spaces and what that means. Could either one of you comment on that?
It's actually quite an interesting question, because where they are at Occupy Wall Street in Zuccotti Park, they're actually occupying private land. It's a private park owned by a corporation.
Right.
And it really, it begs the question, you know, is this a way to address the issue of personal property or corporate property, and really making possibly everything public, or, you know, more things public than have been in the past? And, you know, that's why we actually plan on occupying Bank of America on Friday for bank withdrawal day. And Rana can actually speak a little bit more about that, but we do have a city park which, you know, has been a really great home for us for the past 2 weeks, and I intend to live there and essentially call it my second home, my home away from home, for as long as it takes to get the change that I want to see and my fellows also want to see.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what that change is? Because we've talked about corporations where, you know, the first Occupy movement was at Wall Street. So just for folks who aren't sure what the Occupy movements are about, can you make that connection again about the 99% and who the 1% are?
Well, I believe the most important issue is just equity and the fact that there seems to be a lack thereof in this society and even globally,
mm-hmm.
because corporations have essentially taken control of politics, even in this representative democracy that we have in the United States, that has been the case for many years, and a lot of people say we're taking our country back, mm-hmm. but many others say with even more passion that we're actually claiming our country for the first time. Because this has the potential to certainly change the political discussion and even the format and the process of politics in the long run.
Right. So if our politicians who are supposed to represent us are being paid off by corporations through campaign contributions, is that one also very simple way of looking at how our interests, our meaning the people's interests, are not being represented?
Yeah, definitely. I see a lot of people who would really like to see campaign finance and that is an understatement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The attempts at campaign finance reform in the past and even in the past few decades have been, I would say, maybe unambitious.
Mm-hmm.
And this movement is far more ambitious. It's about direct democracy.
Right, exactly, which is why at the beginning I was asking about if your committees are like a nascent way of developing that direct democracy to actually have consensus or referendums with thousands of people directly having input, each person having input instead of having a representative?
I think the one thing to remember is that to make decisions like this,
mm-hmm.
it just takes more time. It's
right.
not as instant as we're used to, where you can just go one day and vote
mm-hmm.
and then expect for your voice to be heard in that way, because you're not really having your own voice heard. You're only having the voice of that one person who you voted for, who I'm sure, you know, I don't know that any of us have ever voted for somebody who agrees 100% on every issue with us individually. So I just like this movement because there are ways to really get your voice heard, and everybody can be equal as long as they're willing to come and put in the time. And though there are ways for people who don't have a lot of time, who have, you know, have to work all the time and have families too, you know, they can come also when they can and have their voices heard too.
That's great. I mean, I think the other thing that's really amazing about this is that it makes the person who comes with an issue really think about that issue and really discuss it with other people.
Yeah.
And so it empowers that person and creates a situation where they can learn what it means to participate in democracy,
right.
Learn their own voice. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, so I wanted to talk about Bank Withdrawal Day and what that is and when it is, and, of course, its connection to the Occupy Wall Street movement. Can you talk
sure.
about that? Thanks.
Yeah, there is a call out nationwide for people to take their money out of the big banks and put your money in local banks and credit unions specifically. So there's sort of a deadline. November 5th is the big day. It's like, get your money out of the banks by then. there are actually two events happening in Albany. One is tomorrow, the 4th, at noon, at the Bank of America on State Street, which is the big downtown branch, where people will be going in, closing their accounts, taking all their money out, and will be having a rally outside. And then on the 5th, Saturday, at an uptown branch, it's also happening. So I think it's great that there are enough people, like even just in Albany, to rally against Bank of America twice in one weekend.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, so there's, and it's really working nationwide. People have been taking their money out pretty steadily over the last few months. There, I don't know if anybody's heard, there's a Catholic church in San Jose, California that publicly divested its $3 million out of Bank of America. And the speech that the priest made about that was really powerful, about how we shouldn't be contributing money to these institutions that show no social responsibility and who are, you know, getting bailed out with our tax money and continually trying to take money from their investors and their members. And, you know, there's all the issues with foreclosures also, which here in Albany, that's the reason that we're targeting Bank of America this time, is most of the homes in Albany that have been foreclosed on are, you know, it was through Bank of America. They go around and they buy up people's mortgages. So there are a lot of people, especially here in Albany, who have mortgages that get bought by Bank of America. So now they're forced to pay every month to this corporation that they never chose to do business with.
And these are people who had their homes foreclosed on?
Yes, and people who also haven't. I've had friends who, you know, had their mortgage through a different company. Bank of America bought their mortgage and then, you know, said, okay, we see that you haven't been paying enough, like your monthly payments that you had agreed upon actually should have been higher, so now you owe us all of those back, the difference.
Unbelievable.
And so, yeah, right. And they tried to take her house, right. Which she was eventually able to get out of that. But it was very close. It was pretty much like, we need several thousand dollars by the end of the month or we're taking your house. And this is just, she had been up to date on the payments that had been agreed upon for, you know, always.
Yeah.
So Bank of America is particularly bad in Albany.
So this movement is really about helping your neighbors, helping your community. It seems like it's not intellectual or, I mean, it is, but it's a real movement to help real people.
Yeah, it's really multifaceted, and because I think the reason is because anybody is able to come and bring up the issues that are affecting them, and anybody can make their voice heard.
Well, Rana Morris, we are out of time. Daniel, I hope I got your name right. I want to thank you so much, both of you, for joining us this morning.
Okay, and can I invite everybody to come up to Albany and say hi to us in Academy Park? And also on our website, you can find a list of upcoming events.
And your website is?
OccupyAlbany.org.
Okay. And we will definitely repeat that. And I will also want to thank Johnny Ortiz for inviting you on this morning. She couldn't be here to do the interview, but I'm very happy that I was able to do that. And would actually ask you publicly to please come back on the show to do some updates if you have the time.
Sure. That sounds great. Thanks for having us.
Okay. Well, thank you both very much. And stay warm. And we'll be up there to visit you.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Rana Morris and Daniel from the Occupy Movement. And we will go to some music very quickly and stay tuned for the second half of Tell It Like It Is. We will have an interview with Woofers, W-O-O-F-E-R-S. And you'll find out who they are and what that's about in a moment. So my name's Christina Malisoff, and stay tuned for Tell It Like It Is. Okay, and that was a little Hassan, and that was Spirit. He is a Sufi from Morocco. And anyway, let's go to the interview with the Woofers. This is an interview that was pre-recorded with Johnny Ortiz, myself, and Kieran Riley. And these are two young people who are working on the Ortiz farm. So we'll find out more about that right now.
Good afternoon. This is Kieran Riley here, and you are live with WGXC 90.7 FM, and I'm in the studio here with Johnny Ortiz, Christina Malisoff, and we have two very special guests as part of our agricultural programming here on WGXC. And Christina and Johnny, you want to introduce yourselves?
Christine, you go first.
Yeah, this is Christina Malisoff from Tell It Like It Is, and I'm glad to be here with you all. Agriculture is a very important topic and a very important activity, and growing your own is a revolutionary act.
Johnny?
Hi, everybody. This is Johnny Ortiz with Pharmacist Productions, and Kieran and Christina and I co-host Tell It Like It Is. And I'm here because I had the lovely opportunity and serendipitous occasion to work with Woofers this summer. Just by way of a very brief explanation, I live in Chatham Village. We purchased the property next door, and there's not quite half an acre of land that is, if not tillable, workable in some capacity. And that was also serendipitous. It wasn't something that we were planning on, and we wound up getting the property as almost a surprise. In any case, it's immediately adjoining my property, and we combined the two properties. And my goal always was to start an urban farm there. But because of permitting issues, which we might be able to touch on a little bit later, it's not really a farm. It's just a very large garden.
Okay, folks, you heard that right. We have Woofers in the studio with us. And by the way, Tell It Like It Is Thursdays, 10 to 11 a.m. And we also have our agricultural shows on Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. And I would like our guests, if possible, to introduce themselves. And also, in addition to introduce themselves, I need to know what the new term woofer actually means.
Okay, I also think it's important just to back up a little bit how I wound up with woofers. I mean, because it sort of was in the same paradigm as how we acquired the property. I mean, one day it was like, okay, you've got woofers.
So, Johnny, is a woofer, what is a woofer? Is it a disease or?
Well, it only...
canine related?
It depends on how you pronounce it. It could be a disease. Woofer stands for Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. Did I get close with that,
yeah,
Lauren?
You got it.
Okay.
You got it.
Great. So there's lots to this, and it was because of an evolution in the situation and circumstances that I actually wound up with a group of woofers, two full-time, and then access to maybe another four or five more throughout the summer, which actually, again, very serendipitously and fortuitously for us, made the whole project, well, change quite a bit, but also be able to move forward. So it's my great pleasure to be able to introduce Lauren Morley, and I'll let her talk about how she wound up woofing and woofing in Chatham Village for all intents and purposes. And also Evan Paul, who is not technically a woofer. He helped on a very large project that we did, and he shows up just in the nick of time and has an incredible knack for doing that and has done that all summer. So, Lauren, why don't you...
Welcome to the show, guys.
Yep.
Thank you so much. So, as Johnny mentioned, I very fortuitously kind of met Johnny, and she helped us put on the farm stand for the Gray Fox Bluegrass Festival, which is the largest bluegrass festival in the country. And literally at the drop of the hat, and with all of her incredible organizational and agricultural networking that she'd already done in the community, we were able to pull this off. And in that process, we got connected, and she started sharing all of this knowledge that she had of agriculture and how it connects to, well, politics and culture and just how everything's really interconnected. And through that kind of inspiring meeting, we began working with her on this piece of land, which she has really been cradling and bringing to life. Essentially, this piece of land next to where she lives used to be a dump. literally, we've gone and taken like buckets of broken glass, and it's just, it's incredible. And she's gone through this land and done nutrient dense, it's just incredible. She's been teaching us and learning with us, and it's been both internally and externally just a remarkable experience.
Evan Paul.
Well, as I said, I'm not technically a woofer, but I last summer took the jump and looked at the woof website, went out and found a farm, and ever since then, I haven't quite had the same type of job as, you know, the rest of the world does. Once you take that step into deciding to work for your room and board, you gain this freedom where you're actually able to, you know, run into someone like Johnny and go work for her for a couple weeks, come back and work for someone else. And it's allowed me to have opportunities that I'd never have had before. Well, the whole time working outside, working with my hands, and running into other people in similar situations like that.
If I could just add, though, too, this isn't true across the board, but it certainly was true for our group this summer. These are all, like, completely brilliant kids that, if it were a better economy, would probably be pursuing many other opportunities. But, I mean, they're from MIT. They're from Harvard. They're from Columbia. They're from Bard. They're from, you know, I mean, and they are actively and consciously making this choice to reconnect to the planet, to
Columbia
each other.
What about Columbia Green?
We Sorry. Didn't have any Columbia Green
Actually,
kids.
We did. Zach went to Columbia
Oh, Zach
Green
went
for
to Columbia. Yeah. Yeah. We got the community college base covered. So I want people to understand that it's not like, you know, people are resorting to this barter arrangement and choosing to work with their hands in the soil as like a last resort. These are brilliant people with nothing but potential in their future, and they are making this conscious choice to return to something as fundamental as food and farming, and organically.
If I may, in the same way that Johnny acknowledges that the woofers that she encountered this summer are really remarkable, it's also important to acknowledge that we got really lucky with finding Johnny. I've been woofing in this way for about 3 years now, studying in Sweden, all over Europe, Kenya, all over Canada. And there are a lot of situations out there that aren't as ideal as what we found. There's definitely the potentiality to be kind of abused as an extra set of hands on the farm. So yeah, we definitely got lucky. And I think as Johnny explains it, do you want to explain what you call wolfing?
Well, at first I'd like to say the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, and that's also a very effective strategy with woofers.
Oh my God, it's true. Yeah. Johnny always fed as well.
Well, backing up a little bit, I mean, because we are throwing around this term, and maybe people don't understand, which I didn't fully understand until they were living in my house, what the deal was with the woofers. And I do jokingly refer to it as slavery meets the Peace Corps. But it's really true. I mean, farming, you know, you're starting early in the morning. Of course, I watch Democracy Now, and they're not allowed to interrupt me during that time. And then
8 to 9.
I'll talk to them between 5 o'clock in the morning and 8 o'clock in the morning, but between 8 and 9. You know. But then, of course, days are longer in the summer, and we work until we fall over dead. Of course, I have to come in a little bit earlier to start dinner. But that's a basic arrangement, is that you provide shelter, safety. Safety.
It's huge. Yeah.
Very important, both emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, and physically. Food, and you see to the other end. It's kind of like being a den mother, or I saw it that way. I don't think everybody does. But, you know, it's not nothing to have woofers, you know. But it was, in the end, a tremendously productive and rewarding experience. And I'm going to do it again next year.
I just wanted to add also about the issue of safety is that I've worked in an emergency room in the past, and I know that one of the number one work hazards or work situations that are hazardous, the number one is agriculture, is farming. So I want to back you up on that.
So true. And there's a reason why you see farmers out in the fields with straw hats on. No, it's a number one policy for me. Not that everybody always applies themselves, but it's really important.
Are you talking about
heat stroke,
skin cancer?
Heat stroke, skin cancer, dehydration. Yeah, I mean, and also wearing shoes. I know this sounds like really basic stuff.
Oh, wait a minute.
None of the woofers want to wear their shoes in the field. So, you know,
it's so hot.
But you are setting a bad example.
Oh, I'm sorry. Always wear shoes. Woofers. Safety first. And they should be steel-toed, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you, Kieran. You've redeemed yourself.
Okay.
But I want to ask what, because you said you're well-educated and you've had experiences in other countries. What brings you to agriculture? What does that draw? And why is it that I know that you can travel, you can go to almost any country in the world and work on farms, which is, but why agriculture? What's the draw?
Well, part of for me is finding a reconnection between what I'm doing and what comes out of it. I found myself in many jobs where I was working incredibly hard, long hours, slaving away, and I don't even know what's being produced. Mm-hmm. I have no connection with the end product.
Evan, can you describe what your professional background is?
Web design,
yeah,
actually.
Very high-end web design.
Went to school for a lot of, you know, many brilliant, years.
Brilliant artist.
Got very good at it. And what it came down to is money. I didn't like negotiating for the bigger and bigger contract, and that was all that mattered. I could pour my heart and soul into a design, into a website, and it didn't matter. Nothing the client didn't understand. And so, you know, incredibly unfulfilling. It doesn't mean I am not interested in that art form anymore, and it doesn't mean I'm not going to go back to it. But in the way that society is structured right now, I didn't see a way out of that trap, which is why I started from the ground up and started to reconnect with people, with land, with work. And
Evan, also please talk about your current situation in the Quaker community and their social organization.
Yeah, I work for an intentional community.
Located in
East Chatham.
East Chatham.
And they, most people don't know what Quakers are. They assume they're something like the Amish. It's not very true. They're pretty much your everyday average people who have a goal of a slightly different intention. They would like to reconnect to the land, reconnect to people, and realize that relationships with other people, community, land matter.
Also, I think very functional in how you refer to them is intentional community. They are very focused on and being clear with their mindfulness in their decisions in the context of the community, but also on the land and with their animals and the way they relate to each other, et cetera.
May I ask also, maybe for Warren, you've had a number of experiences on farms. Do you find that some farms are more intentional, like, for instance, organic farms where there's community-supported agriculture versus maybe another kind of farm, that sense of intentionality or what comes out of your farming?
Definitely. And I've had experience on conventional, biodynamic, and organic farming. To answer your previous question of how I got to agriculture, my interest was originally in medicine. My intention was to go into medical school. And I started in that process and then really started questioning, where does it all start? And for me, it started with, what are we fueling our bodies with? What are we really living off of? And it's the food we eat, which, again, is why Johnny was a perfect candidate, because she has all this culinary background. So we learned that as well. We didn't only learn how to grow the food. We learned how to use the food, how to nourish our bodies and our souls with the food.
Eat the food.
How to eat the, oh, my God, best part of the summer. There is definitely more of an intentional feeling when there's biodynamics or organics, or when there is a CSA, which stands for community-supported agriculture. And it's just as soon as the community and the public is involved in any way and they start making that connection of where their food comes from, mm-hmm. everything changes. Everything changes. So, yeah, there is a big difference for me.
So to follow up on that question, Johnny, this is your first year of growing food, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, actually, that is not true.
Okay, but the first year with this particular piece of land.
We only have the property for 3.5 months. We've only owned it for 3.5 months. And it started out as a treed yard with a lot of garbage.
Debris in it. So this is interesting because a lot of the same thing is happening right now in inner cities like in Flint and Detroit, Michigan. My question is how was it for you, Evan and Warren, to actually be on the beginning of Johnny's project? Because it's a little bit different to come in on something that's already happening. Did it feel like it was like you were more equal partners or empowered by that?
That's actually a really good question, because one of the greatest parts of it is to watch your work that you're putting in and see the results, and to take something that is a normal piece of property, you know, everyday mainstream society property that everyone lives on currently, and transform it into a piece of land that you can live off of is an incredible process.
Or it sounds like that's health-giving. You can transform that. So
it's
transformation.
Healing. It is healing. Yeah, it's healing in, on all sides of the equation. It's healing.
Exactly. You heal the land, and the land gives right back to you and heals you. And the process starts immediately. You don't have to wait to actually eat the food from the land. Putting your hands in the dirt, you are instantly rewarded.
That's exactly true. I guested this other farm, Woofers, from another farm. That was the initial meeting, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I have a real passion about urban farming, because I don't care where you are. Even if you're growing a basil plant in a clay pot in a high rise, exactly, in a window, participating in that, it changes the entire equation completely. And I really felt it was important with this group of kids that they have this experience. I mean, you can't talk about Chatham Village as being exactly urban. It's certainly not urban compared to the way that Hudson is laid out, per se. It is a little bit more open, but it's still quite small. And I think this is the kind of work that they're going to be doing if they continue in this vein in the future, all over the world. you know, because we have to decentralize our food system for certain, decentralize all of our systems, but certainly food. I mean, you can talk about so many different angles as far as this is concerned, but the whole issue of the cost of fuel is just going to have increasingly a huge impact. So unless you can actually participate in creating your own food security, you're going to be at a disadvantage. I really strongly believe that. So I thought it was really important that these guys get that kind of exposure.
And all of the work that we've done on Johnny's Land has been without fossil fuels. So that's been enormously helpful. To answer the question that Christina posed of coming in at the grassroots ground basis of a project was an absolute gift. Because it's so easy to see beautiful pieces of land and say, oh, you know, that's great. That's, you know, apple trees. That's fantastic. Not thinking that 16 years prior, someone was digging those holes and planting those trees. And there were two kind of huge gifts, really, that we got from seeing this from the ground up. And that's 80% of the work on farms is maintenance. Yes, there's growing. Yes, there's cultivating. But it's maintenance. You have to keep things, you know, running and able. And the other is this incredible satisfaction of seeing a project through. You know, you put the plants in the ground, and then, you know, a couple months later, you have this incredible pasta sauce. And you're like,
you're
I made it.
Salted by tomatoes.
It's so which we are.
The best tomato.
Is anyone else getting sick of tomatoes yet? I'm sorry. I got to be the, all right, here we go. Actually, I got to be the guy, you know.
No, me too.
So I got a tough question, not to put anyone on the spot.
Of course.
You mentioned the term slavery, joking around, and basically because it's really tough working, and sometimes I'm sure you're not taking care of. I've heard of woofers basically having to leave after a day because of horrid circumstances. But I've also known a bunch of farmers who refuse to take any woofers because it's just too much drama. It's too much. It's just not efficient. They have their operation. There's no way these people could fit in for a few weeks or something like that. But let's talk about the woofer program from your perspective. What do you think some sorts of things are that could be improved on? I've always wanted to woof, but circumstances, I've never been able to travel around the world from farm to farm, but it sounds awesome. But look, what things you guys want to just...
You know, Kieran, can I jump in there? Because I think that this is really important. I want to encourage people to consider this. This is an...
Yeah, it's an awesome program.
But... It's like, you know, if you're going to adopt an animal, which is not to make the comparison too directly between animals.
We love you, Johnny.
And woofers. And they know how I treat my animals.
Woof, woof.
But, you know, it's you need to be set up for it. You need to have a place where they're going to be comfortable. You know, I mean, a lot of people, like, throw them under the house or under the barn or something. Or they sleep in cars or some ratty, you know. You have to. I mean, it's the same. I make the comparison to adopting an animal because you need to be responsible. And there are, you know, agencies that actually review your capacity to perform basic functions so that you can appropriately support this creature, right? The same is true for woofers. It's not like, oh, yay, it's free labor. You have a terrific responsibility to their needs and supporting them. You're right. There is like some drama that comes along very often with it. But I mean, it's not like, you know, they're automatons. So you need to be able to provide. I think this is a huge obligation. And I want to encourage people to look into woofing, but also you need to be able to accommodate these people, take care of them, feed them, shelter them, and educate them.
Yeah.
Thank you, Johnny.
Can we talk about the educational component?
Huge.
Well, to answer your question, Karen, people go woofing for many different reasons. Everyone's looking for something completely different when they go out. Some want a new experience. Some want to learn. Some want to be full-time farmers. Some just want a little break from their life. And what I found is the most important piece is that both sides have a common understanding, that there's a very clear agreement made of what the situation's going to be before you get there.
Right.
Some people are completely fine with camping in a tent. Some people want a room in a proper house. And both of those situations can work out beautifully as long as it's made clear in the beginning what what both sides are going to offer and get in exchange.
So you're saying communication is key. Is there like an Angie's List of woofing? Do you know what the Angie's List is?
It's a great idea, though.
No, really, well, because like, how do you know until you actually get there and meet the person in person, and then you're like, whoa.
Lauren can speak to that.
Yeah, so on the Woof website, there are actually reviews of each of the farms. Generally, as soon as a farm gets a couple of negative reviews, they're then removed from the website.
There is
definitely a control. Word of mouth is also huge. A lot of the farms that I visited and worked with has been as a result of just word of mouth and talking to people. And I do want to echo what Evan has said, that communication and a very like common concrete understanding is absolutely enormous, and along with that is patience, because you're not just working with the plants that are growing. It's you're growing as well. Mm. It's a huge growth period, and I think for what we had in the summer was equal growth of Johnny and myself. You know, she turned into Mama Johnny, but she didn't ask for that. It just kind of happened, but she took care of us well, and we worked hard. And thanks.
Awesome. Actually, if I could just, I want to speak to what Evan said. That's really an excellent point, Evan, that, you know, I mean, I personally could not handle my situation in high turnover. Like, I would never accept a woofer that wanted to come for a week or 10 days. I mean, I'm looking for season-long commitment, which is not possible for everybody. And as you said, other people are looking for different kinds of situations. Okay. So, excellent point.
I just want to jump right in very quickly and ask both of you, Evan and Lauren, you're wearing a T-shirt, Lauren, that says Think. And I think it's got, from my nursing background, it looks like an axon and a dendrite, which is a nerve cell.
A neuron.
Sorry, neuron. And then you're wearing, Evan, a T-shirt that says, Exalt the New God. So I found myself staring at you during the interview, and there are two hands embracing a television set. And what I want to say to both of you is can you both just very quickly talk about the spiritual aspect of growing your own food, growing food for the community, and reconnecting to the earth?
That is a fantastic question. Without getting too deep into spirituality, connecting with people and with life itself, plants, animals, it doesn't matter. The fact that we are all part of this earth and part of the greater being called life on earth changes your life once you acknowledge that as the most important thing. If you are putting money first, your career first, or any sort of title first, you are missing out on a whole different world that is, in my opinion, far more rewarding.
That is so awesome. You came from a highly technological...